Today I'm going to talk about some research that we've done as part of the Helping Young Smokers Quit program, which is at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And we're looking at the relationship between community support for youth tobacco cessation programs, for youth tobacco cessation as a kind of just a concept, and the availability of programs for youth. So the first thing I want to do is describe the availability of community-based youth smoking cessation programs, to analyze some of the factors associated with the programs, and describe some of the modeling challenges. What seemed like a pretty simple analysis turned into something very complex, and without going into great detail about the specific statistical methods, I think it's really important because I think that in the field of tobacco control in general, there's a lot of situations where there's very complex data that if you don't take account of the complexity of the data, your findings can be very different. And we experienced that. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that and then discuss the policy and advocacy strategies to support and enhance program availability. So we have a really big team working on Helping Young Smokers Quit program. There's a bunch of us at University of Illinois at Chicago. There's the Survey Research Laboratory, which is affiliated with our group, and they've done all of the survey research that I'm going to tell you about. RTI International performed a lot of the support, and Westat has also been involved with this study. So just as a quick review for those of us who are not familiar with the Helping Young Smokers Quit program, it is a multi-year, three-phase initiative that actually began, I think, in 2001 or two. It's been a long time now. We've been really lucky. We've been funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the National Cancer Institute, and the CDC. The overall mission of HYSQ is to accelerate knowledge about effective interventions for youth tobacco cessation. And the project has gone for three phases. The first phase was a national survey of programs, and that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. And the first phase was really essential to doing any of the subsequent phases, because when we started this program 5 or 6 years ago, we really the field didn't have a great feel for what was out there. So before any evaluation could take place, we needed to take inventory and see how many programs there are out there and what are they like. So that's what I'm going to talk about tonight, is some research related to that. So the goal for phase one was to identify a national sample of existing cessation resources for youth. We used snowball key informant surveys in 408 counties that were selected to be representative of the counties of the United States. And once we identified the counties, we went in, found key informants, asked them if they knew of programs or if they knew of anybody who might know of a program, until we found programs. And then we conducted telephone interviews with the program administrators. So what's a youth tobacco cessation program? We defined it as anything where tobacco cessation is a recognized component of a treatment program. They had to provide direct services to youth aged 12 to 24. And this was something that kind of speaks to what Molly was just talking about. With defining programs, we really had to work on refining our definition, because there, when you asked people if they had a program in some of our focus groups, the answers ranged widely from people saying, yeah, we've got a program, when it was just a media campaign. It wasn't providing direct services. So that became apparent that we needed to standardize that definition and really focus on direct services. We required that at least 50% of the program participants were in a youth age group. It was important to us that the program was not part of a research initiative, so that we were getting real community on the ground programs, and that it had been in operation for at least 6 months. So we sampled the counties, or groups of contiguous counties in the United States, with probability proportional to size, which meant that larger counties were selected with almost certainty into the sample. Size measure was based on the size of the youth population, and we wanted to stratify counties so that we were able to take account of urban and rural percent poverty and state investments in tobacco control. And that latter one was an attempt to kind of, one of our team members on the group said, well, you have to think about the old adage about the drunk looking for his keys. And say, so why are you standing by the streetlight? Because that's where the light is. So we thought it's probably more likely to find programs in states with high tobacco control expenditures. So we looked disproportionately in states with high tobacco control expenditures and less in states with low tobacco control expenditures. So the 408 counties selected that were spread out all over the United States. The different colored stars indicate different numbers of counties identified in each state. The California, the big states had more counties, is basically what this visual shows. So the process of our finding the programs, the key informant snowball sampling, was started with identifying sectors within a county or a community. We looked for the education sector, so we started with the Department of Education or the school board in the county, the public health sector, usually the Department of Public Health, voluntary organizations like the Lung Association, Cancer Society, Heart Association, anybody that would potentially have something to do with smoking, and then other, we looked, we were provided with lists of youth tobacco cessation programs that were marketed by like the TAG and TEP and some of the curricula that market their programs. So we first asked the first contact within each of those sectors, and they referred us to another contact and so on and so forth until we ended up with actual program informants. During that process, we talked to a lot of people. In the first round of key informants that we searched for, we had over 5,500, and they referred to another nearly 4,000, and from that group, we contacted 1,300 program administrators, most of which were eligible by the criteria that we defined, and then we finally surveyed 591 programs across the 408 counties that we sampled. As part of this process, we asked every one of the key informants that we identified questions about community awareness, support, and priority for youth tobacco cessation. So we talked to over 10,000, almost 11,000 people in search of these programs, and over half of them, 6,500, answered at least two of the questions that we felt were important to define community context. And one was thinking about tobacco use among youth, how would you rank it as a priority in your community? And we gave them a 10-point scale. And then we asked how much of a priority is youth tobacco cessation is among leaders in their community. And we gave people a definition of what we considered leaders in the community so it wasn't ambiguous. And that had three potential answers. So what factors did we think might be associated with program availability? Well, we went with our sampling methodology and we thought, well, we hope that the things that we thought would be associated with program availability would be, so the tobacco control, the stratification criteria basically, the tobacco control expenditures, smoking prevalence in the community, or at the state level, I'm sorry, we wanted to do that at the community level, but there were no data for all of the communities that we're looking at. At the county level, the youth population, the number of key informants, the community context, socioeconomic status, and whether the community was rural and urban. So I'm going to give you the punchline first. We found the 591 programs, 62% of the counties that we found that we surveyed had at least one program. So that was pretty impressive, and I think our whole group was surprised that there were that many programs found. When we ran our models, we found that program availability is associated with the size of the youth population, state tobacco control expenditures and this idea of community context. So the bigger the youth population, the more likely the stronger the tobacco control expenditure environment, the more likely programs were to be found, and the stronger the community context. So what we experienced, though, kind of the interesting thing from a research perspective, was that the simple question turned into a very complex model. We had four levels of data that we were looking at. So we had multiple questions within each informant, and then multiple informants within each county, multiple counties within a state, and the implication of that from a research perspective is that you expect there to be some correlation at each level. 5 minutes, okay. And that correlation affects the significance, basically, of the variables that you're, or potentially affects the significance or the non-significance of the variables that you're looking at. And the other challenge is that we're measuring latent variables. We're trying to define this construct of community context using questions that were, we felt, related to community context, but it's very hard to define what exactly community context is. So when we first started doing the modeling for this, we did not take into account this complex data structure, and we just kept being really puzzled by our results. And we were really lucky about halfway through the project that a biostatistician, we had a very strong biostatistics team, and we were starting to look at the multi-level models and explore that as a possible explanation for why our data just seems like mush. We were able to get some really dedicated, focused effort from S.K. Sagawa, and he just performed miracles with our data. I'm not going to go into the details of this because I frankly can't, but what he did was worked with a model called GLAM with a Winbugs modification. What GLAM does is basically it takes the best of hierarchical modeling, which is what's used generally to account for the multi-level data structure problem, and structural equation modeling, which is often very good at dealing with measurement and latent variables, but not that great with unbalanced data or multi-level data. And GLAM usually does both well, but it couldn't accommodate another kind of statistical challenge that we had, which is we wanted to incorporate random effects for each of the levels of data that we had. So SK wrote some really cool programs that turned out not to be that hard to do and not that hard to run. I couldn't do it, but I think that it's quite replicable. And we were able to come up with some results that just held water when we did them many different ways. And the nice thing from my perspective is that they made intuitive sense. So finally, we thought, not that we were mining the data for what we had hoped to find, but it's really nice when, after all that effort, you have some face validity to the findings. So the bottom line was that, like I said, our results were different when we didn't take into account the complex structure of our data. And two of the primary ways that they were different was the community context variable did not hang together at all in the simple models. And in fact, when we included individual items from that we built the community context with, they still didn't really make sense. They would come in the opposite direction that we would expect, or they wouldn't be significant. And individual items were not associated with program availability. So, to wrap it up, the lessons from this particular component of the research project was that programs are pretty widely available. We were really surprised. Tobacco control expenditures are positively associated with program availability. What leaders think and what the respondents think about the priority of youth in the community matters. Tobacco use in the community matters. And I think this is an important point for advocates and policymakers, is that programs existed in communities where there was kind of a grassroots awareness and priority. And I think that if we carry that one step further, I think that when that doesn't exist, there's not programs, and that kind of makes a lot of sense. But the final lesson from the research was that it's very important to even when you have somewhat straightforward analyses with a fairly well-defined model to take into account the structure of the data, because that just totally changed our perspective on it. So that's it. Thank you.